my garden to reclaim our daughter, and the cauldron we lost in the tree. Atonement for insult resulted in tumult, the highest of prices we paid. We set forth for Ireland, we crossed to the other land. Our king was a bridge between worlds. I tell you these things, but how can I know? I'm three times in the castle of every emerald. When in the fire exploded their ire, grand poison, a spear. The cauldron was shattered, but nothing else mattered. We claimed it and fled with our lives. 700 set sail, but with 7 returned, with the cauldron and the head of our king. I tell you these things, but how can I know? I'm three times in the castle of every emerald. Arthur lay waiting to rise up, hardy as he may. When the lance is forsaken, the sleeper awakens to take a sip from the rail. 700 set sail, but with 7 return, with the cauldron and the words of our king. I tell you these things, but how?
Welcome again to Woodwose Radio. This is Brian. We have Joy here again with us tonight for another episode of Tarot Talk.
Yeah, all right. We've got an interesting show tonight. What we're going to do is Brian is apparently having a real hard time with technology tonight, so it's probably mostly going to be me talking at you guys. But what I'm planning on doing tonight is we've got the tens, and we've got the sun, judgment, and we're going to do the world as well. So we're going to do three major arcana and all four of the tens. Now, the reason that we're doing this is because next show, we're going to be doing all of the court cards at once. So we're talking about 16 cards, and that's going to be pretty, you know, massive of an info dump. I wanted to do it that way simply because most of all of the court cards are people, essentially. So we want to focus on that, we want to deal with that, and we want to show you how to use them. I am going to announce this now, not next show, but we're the one after. We're going to change the format up. Since we're not going to be discussing individual cards anymore, Brian and I were just talking about, you know, what we do for future shows. And the idea that I had come up with is I will do a spread here. I will tell all of you, the listeners, what the cards are and what spread that I'm doing. Then we're going to delay for a little bit. Brian and I will talk about, you know, whatever we talk about. And this will give you guys time to actually pull out all the cards and lay them out in the spread order that I've got. And then what I will do is interpret the spread as it's on the table. And I will tell you the thought processes. I'll tell you the connections that are being made. I'll tell you why I'm seeing this aspect and that part of these cards and what it's relating to the overall spread, so that y'all can get practice pulling all of these cards together. Because it's not just the interpretation of the individual cards, it is the bringing it all together into one cohesive reading. And Brian and I were just talking about various spreads that we could do. The Celtic Cross is, of course, going to be one of the main ones. There's going to be 3 and 5 card spreads. We'll do many of those so that you can see what's going on. We'll do probably the pentagram spread that I talked about last week, and we are definitely going to wind up doing the bondage spread, which is what I came up with, and I'll explain the interpretations and how I came up with various things. But anyway, none of that relates to tonight. That's in the future, so it's something to look forward to.
Everything in tarot relates to the future.
Well, this is true. Okay. I hadn't even thought of that, you know? All right.
Oh, that's right. Everything that we'll ever mention relates to tarot somehow.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so I hope everybody's got their major arcana cards out. The Sun, Judgment, and the World, the last three of the major arcana. Now, okay, in the Robin Wood deck, and we advertise her all the time. We should be getting all kinds of money from her from increase in sales, but probably not. Anyway, the Sun has a very cherub-like child sitting on a Shetland pony, I swear, riding through a field of sunflowers with the sun in the sky behind him. Okay. Just looking at this, you get a happy feeling. So the whole point of the Sun card is joy, and it is unrestrained joy. It is a childlike excitement in anything. Remember how, well, probably not since you were very, very little, but remember back the feeling where you could look at a flower, and it was the most interesting thing ever. You would, you know, touch the petals so delicately, and you would want to share this one flower with everybody. And then there's another flower right next to it, same species of flower, and you're just as fascinated with that flower as you were with the first one. And you were discovering a whole new thing all over again. And you did this with cats, and you did it with your mom's face, and you did it with a noisemaker that you happen to be given that you blow through. and somebody that would take a couple of marbles and hold them in their hand and juggle them around a little bit while they were covered and drop one into their lap and then open their hand up and there's only one in there now. And you'd be going, where did it go? And it's this excitement in everything, this happiness in developing even more and learning something different and learning something new. That is what the sun represents. Because where the moon hides secrets and the nighttime has things that are normal looking strange, the sun illuminates everything and shows it for what it is. It's no longer secret. It's no longer something that's hidden. You see that the shadow that was in the corner at night that looked like a man with a cape on is now actually just the light coming in from the window and the shadow of a doll that you have sitting on the windowsill. And it's no longer frightening. It's no longer scary. You go, oh, that's why it looked like that. But it's a new. It's a thing where the secret is illuminated, and it's no longer a secret thing. And that's not a bad thing. It's what is. And that, in the nutshell, is the sun. Now, Robin is talking in the book about various aspects of what's on the card. One of the things she mentions is that the child is naked. And once again, this is back to unrestrained freedom. When you have clothes on, your body is compressed. It's tied in. There's an extra surface to your skin that isn't there, that isn't normally there, I should say. And that it only allows so much expansion in your body while you have your clothes on. Take those off and feel the wind on your chest or your back, which is normally covered, or, you know, even most believingly or not, your ass, which never feels the wind. And there's a difference.
Well, depends on how much you're into beans and stuff.
Well, this is true, or going to the beach or stuff, but, you know, when you take all your clothes off, suddenly, okay, then your genitals. I know of very few people that actually go around naked in public, so they typically don't feel the sunshine on their genitals, they don't feel the wind on their genitals, they don't feel the rain on their genitals, they may feel water on them when they get into the pool, but that's, you know, different. But there's a difference there. Everything suddenly becomes changed somehow. It's some sort of tactile difference between feeling the sunshine on your arm, which you feel every day, and feeling it on areas that you normally have covered.
And it's kind of a sense of innocence and, you know, like back to the garden sort of sensation.
Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, I always interpret it as the senses get scrubbed because there's more of a connection. You do have a vulnerability when you're naked. I mean, you can't. Our society teaches us that, you know, clothes are a requirement, and there's, you know, a billion-dollar industry, several billion, trillion-dollar, I would say, built around covering our skin, okay, and looking nice. And yes, part of the fashion industry is peacocking up and presenting a good look for a potential mate and attracting attention, and it's doing the budgie dance with clothes. But when you remove all of that, there is a vulnerability because now there's nothing that is hiding who you really are. You know, when you have clothes on, you can cover flaws and scars and stretch marks and the third nipple that you got and the cellulite in your ass.
The witch's tit.
Oh, or something. You know, all the moles and the tags and stuff. You know, you can cover all of that up so people don't see it and they're not put off by it. But when you don't have clothes on, you don't have that. I mean, you can put some makeup on it, but, you know, you can still see it. And when you are presenting the whole you, the visual you, without the enhancements, it's a difference between, I don't even have a comparison, mainly because my cat is trying to climb all over me right now. And so we've got this whole different feeling to everything. So that's one thing that she wanted to bring out. Let's see.
Do you mind if I read the little message statement from the Druidcraft Tarot about the Sun card?
Go ahead.
It says, "You are free to express the radiant essence of your being. Joy and creation flow from you like the rays of the sun."
That's pretty much what I was saying. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole point of the sun. It is an innocence. It's a freedom of expression. It's a radiant being. One of the most striking comments that I ever remember hearing, one of those times when you're sitting there and you're just going through your life and you're having fun, and all of a sudden this thing jumps up and smacks you across the face, wakes you up, and shakes you down to your core. One of those times happened to me when I was watching The Empire Strikes Back. And Luke is going through his Jedi training with Yoda, and Yoda is doing the do or do not, there is no try. He says at one point, "Luminous beings we are, not this crude flesh." And that hit me so deep into our core. And that's what's encapsulated by the sun. We are a luminous being. We are more than this, than what the physicality around us. Okay? The sun is the reflection of shining that onto others. When I was in Christian school in second grade, Let Your Light Shine, I don't even remember the song now. I just remember Hide It Under a Bushel. No, I'm going to Let It Shine.
This Little Light of Mine.
Yep, This Little Light of Mine. There you go. It's the sun, okay? That is the same thing. Do not hide yourself. Do not be afraid to be yourself. Be excited to share with others your happiness and your joy. Because I'll tell you something, one of the most common things to do is if you smile at somebody, they're going to smile back. And just the act of smiling will lift somebody's spirits. They could be having a bad day. There's a thing going around on Tumblr occasionally that this guy jumped off the Brooklyn Bridge and killed himself. And when the cops went to his home and searched it, they found a note that said, "I'm going to kill myself today, but if somebody smiles at me, I won't." And this is, you know, one of those profound statements that you've got to realize that your attitude affects not only your mental state, but it affects people around you too. So be happy. I mean, there's really no reason not to be. And that's the sun, okay? Various other decks have different interpretations. We were talking last week about the Shinto deck. I did some investigation. I found out that I was wrong. There is not a Shinto deck. However, there is a deck for the Yukioi deck that came out in the mid-80s. This is one of those specialty decks where the court cards and the major arcana are beautifully illustrated, and the pip cards are just, you know, swords or staffs or whatever. This is one of those decks, but it is beautiful, and that's what I was seeing and talking about last time. So anyway, let's see. The sun in the Housewives Tarot is a wife giving her husband his breakfast, and it's two eggs sunny side up, of course. Happiness, clarity, and optimism. Let's see. The Wiccan, the Llewellyn Tarot. This looks like looks like Kukulcan on, or no, I guess it could be Lou Samaldanić in this. Yeah, no, it's Luzlaw Giffey's. The
Lou of the Long Hand.
Yeah, from the Welsh myth.
Yes, yes.
The Solstice King, the Day King. Interesting.
He's,
so that's an interesting.
Well, because Lou in either Irish or Welsh mythology is the sun god.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, he's obviously got different skills according to the mythology applied to him, but nonetheless, he is the light bearer.
Mm-hmm. In the Whimsical Tarot, it's Tinkerbell or Thumbelina, probably Thumbelina, but. Under a daytime sky. That's cute. And then, let's see. That's Druidcraft. And, okay, the Hello Kitty deck is the same thing. Anyway, but yeah, that's the sun reminds us, you know, that we are not just flesh. We are people, and not to hide that. And to share it with others, because that's important. They need to know that too. It's hard. One of the things that I try to do is I simply try to be polite to everybody, because it's very hard getting through the day on a normal day-to-day basis. Okay? There's all kinds of worries, and there's things that you could do or that you should do or that you didn't do. There's problems constantly, okay? And everybody knows this is part of life. It's very, very easy to spiral downward into depression and anger and sullenness just by, you know, living your daily life, okay? It's hard to be cheerful. It's hard to be upbeat. It's hard to be happy. But it's something that everybody wants and something that everybody can do. You have to think good thoughts for yourself. You have to think positively and pull yourself up, and then you can pull others up. But anyway, that's enough harping on this one. on to Judgment. Judgment is the number 20 card. That's something else you wanted to mention. With the sun, it being number 19, Robin mentions that she had a note that said that it takes 19 years for a great cycle, because so that the moon is right or the sun is rising in exactly the same place. Or is it
yes.
The moon? No, it's the moon. The 19-year lunar cycle, and that's important because there were a few. Peoples who did the great year. The Celts were one of them. They noticed that it was rising in exactly the same place and that the full moon was on the exact same night. So that was one great cycle. And it's interesting that this is the number 19 card, because now the fool is 19 years old and he looks a lot more joyous and a lot more happy about being himself because of all that he's learned. Because don't forget, this is still a fool's journey through the tarot. All right, Judgment. I know when people think of Judgment, they tend to think of the final trump and you know, God going, okay, now you've been good in these and you've been bad in this, and we're going to sentence you to hell now. But actually, the judgment is not him judging you. It's you judging yourself. It's rebirth. It is understanding who you are and working on that to be the best person that you can be and reinventing yourself. And you can do this every single day. I know there's times when I've reinvented myself just, you know, here recently in the past 3 years. It's something that you have to do with a lot of introspection, and thankfully, you know, the card of joy and happiness and secrets revealed was just previous to this, so that you can look at yourself realistically and say, okay, I did this good, I did that bad, I need to improve this part, and I'm going to work on that. And that's what the judgment card is. It's your conscience. In the whimsical tarot I just looked at, it's Jiminy Cricket whispering into Pinocchio's ear. Okay? This is a realistic look at yourself. Okay? And it's an opportunity to become someone different while still remaining the same person. If we were talking about Doctor Who fandom, it would be one of his regenerations, because I was just reading up on that earlier. In the Robin Wood deck, she's got an androgynous person coming out of a cauldron with the phoenix rising behind them. And the phoenix, you know, represents the perfect representation of this card. It is, you know, them destroying themselves in a fire and then coming back to life again to try once more. Okay? And I think this is one of those things that gets mainstream religions or the you only live once groups really upset, because in the Wiccan belief, we don't have just one chance. We've got multiple chances. Okay, it's not one life and you're dead. It's you have one life, you die, you go to the Summerlands, you think about what you've done, you plan out the lessons for your next lifetime, you're reborn into a new body, you live that life out, you die, you go to the Summerlands, you think about what lessons you learned, and you plan out what you want, and this cycle continues until you say, okay, that's enough. I'm done. I've learned everything that I wanted to. My favorite analogy for the cycle of reincarnation is the American school system. Okay? Think about from when you were in kindergarten, okay? What did you do? You went to school, you were all excited, you were there, you had friends, you played, you did pretend, you colored, you learned your ABCs, you learned the colors, and then school was over and you went home for the summer, okay? And you had time to practice coloring inside the lines and writing your numbers and drawing pictures for mom, and then you went to first grade. And you learned even more how to color correctly and do the shading with the crayons, which is almost impossible. And you took those numbers and you started learning that you can put one thing and one thing together, and now you have two things. And you learned basic math skills and subtraction skills. And you played more and you deepened your friendship with the people that you knew. And then you went home for the summer. And you were regretting that you weren't in school anymore and you weren't going to see them. And so you practiced the addition and so on until you get to 12th grade and you are now doing calculus and trigonometry and you've learned physical sciences and you've had these friends all of your life and you know them and you've cried with them and you've done things with them. And this is the cycle of rebirth. You have a period where you are learning things and you are socializing with friends. You have a period where you are no longer with them, where you can practice and you can integrate those lessons into yourself. And then you come back with more lessons, building on the lessons that you learned last time. Okay? And this is the cycle of judgment as well. What I can't stand is the one-lifetime people who say, this is it. Well, I don't care how good you are not going to hit a slam dunk the very first time you ever try, okay? You're just not. If you do, you're really, really strange. people, by their nature, learn best when they fail. And then they improve and they get better and they move on. That is how lessons are learned. Okay? Having one lifetime to get it right or else is stupid, in my opinion. Okay? It is short-sighted. But because you have major religions that are scared of death, then, you know, they don't have any conception of what comes after, okay? They are told that, you know, yes, you die and you go to heaven and you're with God and everything is wonderful and great for eternity, okay? Well, that's kind of vague. And I hate to be down on Christianity, but this is one of the biggest things that I had against them, is Christianity is a death cult, okay? It is all about dying. You have life, and life is hard, and life is serious, and you have to obey, and if you mess up, you're going to be punished, and if you do good, it's never to your credit, and then you die, and you're either punished or rewarded forever for what you did in a relatively short period of time, okay? Because let's face it, eternity is a shit-long big time, okay? If we were to compare it to a daytime, to a day, then a lifetime, even 150 years of living, would be less than a nanosecond. But to judge your entire existence for that day on that one nanosecond is the height of stupidity to me. Okay? Because you don't know what you're doing for that one little nanosecond. You have no way of, you know, in the overall scheme of everything, you could have tripped and fell at that point. But then you're sentenced to jail because, you know, you didn't do what you needed to do during that one little time period. And that little time period could come at any point. You don't know which. So, I mean, reincarnation only makes sense to me at that point. Because when you have, you know, all eternity being judged for something that happened in a split second, you know, okay, anyway. On to other things.
It does relate to tarot. It really does.
Because this is, you know, this is the renewal, this is the rebirth card. It is a chance to understand that you can reinvent yourself and you can come back from spring break and do better. Because over spring break, the 3 days that you had that day, you can practice the multiplication, the algebra that you learned, and come back and resolve to do better so that you pull that D up to an A in the second half of the semester, okay? And so that's judgment. Judgment, also, one other thing with judgment is when you're doing this introspection and promising to do better, you have to be really brutally honest, okay? This is another one of the light cards. There's lots of yellows, there's reds, there's whites, and it's an illuminated card, just like the sun is. During the process where you're judging yourself, you cannot ever fake your decisions, okay? Because if you're not being honest with yourself, you're not going to improve. If you're being a bitch and wandering around and kicking puppies when they're down, and you sit down to do introspection, and you go, I'm a good person, well, no, you're not. You're hurting innocent creatures simply because they're in your way. You're not being honest with yourself, and because you're not being honest with yourself, you can't fix that aspect. I mean, if you want to be living a self-delusion, that's fine. But it's one of those cases where if you're going to change things in your life, you have to be honest. You have to look objectively at something that's very, very subjective and go, okay, I'm screwing up here. Okay, I'm doing all right here. And commit to fixing that instead of just carrying on as you are. Okay?
And I think, too, that this card really relates to the whole process that occurs in when you're like studying to train as a Wiccan or as a Druid or any number of other things, where there is that need to sit down and undergo kind of a complete evaluation of who you are. It's sort of a pivotal step in changing your life.
Nafe-sitan.
Exactly. Greek for
know thyself. It was over the arch in the Oracle of Delphi, just for those of you that are going, what?
And you'll have seen it in The Matrix, in the Oracle's kitchen, as Temet Nostre, the Latin version of the same. But nonetheless, I mean, the whole idea with the theme of the rebirth or judgment card is that, you know, you are preparing for that initiation, that rite of passage, that change in the course of your life that leads you to become a new you, you know. I mean, the Sun card preceding it reveals to you the things that need changing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the rebirth card that says, you know, you are taking the time now to evaluate, eliminate, and I don't
reinvent.
Know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And yeah, the two of them together are really, really powerful. But you know, looking at them individually, yes, the Sun reveals what you need to work on. And previous to that, the Moon is hiding everything. And part of the process with the journey is the star, you have the spiritual awakening. You're starting to come to, I don't know, come to realize that you are part of a larger tapestry of everything. And you are starting to come to an awareness of your place in the scheme of things. The Moon shows you that there are hidden places, that there are things that you need to dig into to look at yourself and look at the environment around you. The Sun illuminates those areas so that you can start working on them. Judgment is you deciding, okay, this is good, this is bad, and deciding what to do with those things that the Sun revealed, okay? Which is a perfect segue into the world, because if you do that, you get everything. You become the illuminated being, the ascended master, the person who is not a know-it-all, but somebody who understands that they understand themselves, therefore they can understand others, and they can understand their places in the universe. The self-actualized person who is now at the beginning of their journey. Okay? I mean, I know that seems stupid, but this is a cycle, again. The world tells us that, yes, we have gone through a major section of the life. We have learned many, many things. We have integrated those lessons. We have understood those lessons. Those lessons are part of us. They will never be separate from us. But this is also simply the beginning of the journey to learning. Okay? And everybody that does any mystical anything in movies or whatever say, okay, now you're ready to start your journey at this point. And this is what the world is, okay? Once you know yourself, once you know your flaws, once you know how you react to something, you can actually start not only sharing that with other people, but you can actually start living the life that you're supposed to live as someone who is wise, okay? And anybody who is considered to be wise is never going to say, well, I'm wise. What they're going to say is, well, I know some things. Because the thing about wisdom is that you realize just how much you don't know about everything else.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, true mastery is shown in humility, because the true understanding of the, you know, of your training will allow you to see that there is still so much more that you don't know.
Oh,
Because once you've known yourself, I mean, there is, you know, that's a huge process and a major step in your life. But that's only the beginning, because once you know yourself in the truest sense of the word, that's the point at which you have to begin now to integrate who you really are into the world around you.
Mm-hmm. And you have to start studying how other people are behaving. You have to – knowing yourself is – everybody says that that's the start, and it really, really is. Because I'll tell you something. If you don't know yourself, people are going to be confusing as shit, okay? Because they're going to do things that you don't understand what the hell they're doing them for. But here's the thing. If you understand yourself and you understand your motivations and you understand your desires, 99.999% of the time, that's going to be the exact reason that somebody else is doing it.
Okay? Well, and I think it was Jung that said something along the line of, the best way to know someone else's darkness is to understand your own.
Mm-hmm.
You
and,
know.
There was I was reading Foundation with Isaac Asimov, and I think it was the third book, and one of the characters in there said, show me somebody who says that they don't understand people, and I'll show you somebody that doesn't understand themselves. And that was another one of those jumped up and slapped me in the face and said, this is profound, pay attention, because that is one of the most true statements I've ever heard in my life. If you understand yourself, understanding other people becomes very, very easy, because almost all the time their motivations are going to be the same ones that you would have in a similar situation. Your motivations are happiness and sex and food and shelter. That's what everybody else is wanting too. And it's not a difficult thing to get. As long as they have those things, most people are going to be content. The rest of their life can be shit. It can be falling apart around them. But if they have a house, a roof over their head, if they have a partner where they can get their rocks off with normally, if they have food on their table so that they can eat, and they have security in their mind and body, they're fine.
Yeah, if you want to really take a look at a graphic visual like portrayal of that concept, look up Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs on Google, and you'll find tons of like charts. There's a little pyramid thing that, you know, basically displays that exact concept.
Mm-hmm. You know, and as long as they have that, as long as you have that, you're going to be content. The rest of your life can be falling apart. You cannot have a car. Well, you know what? You've got a roof over your head and you've got a job to go to. That's security. You can take a bus or you can walk. A car is not important. You don't have $100 million so that you can buy a super huge widescreen TV. Okay? You've got a roof over your head. You've got
you've got like food on the table, you've got a place to sleep. You're basically doing better than a huge population in the world. I mean, it's all about perspective, really. I mean, if there's something that's shit in your life, consider the fact that, say, okay, your car's, you know, dropped its transmission somewhere on the highway or something. Well, you know, in some cultures, a bike is all they need and all they ever want to get around.
The gods must be crazy where...
that's good shit.
African guy finds a glass Coca-Cola bottle as litter on the savannah. And he has to take it back to the place that it came from. So the gods must be insane because, you know, this is what they've decreed and his elders said. And so he's, you know, taking it back to civilization and he's walking around. He's got his spear. He's got, you know, a couple of things, days of food on his back. And here's all these people running around in a city who are upset because they don't have the latest fashion. And he wears the same outfit every single day, all day. And the only time he replaces it is when it literally falls apart on him. and he's happy and he's content and all these other people are upset. Okay? That's the world. That's the world encapsulated again. Okay? It is an understanding that once you know yourself and once you understand yourself and you can understand other people, that then you have literally everything. Okay? It may not be that you have all the material stuff you want, but honey, material stuff are not the things that you need to be focusing on. The things that are actually important, you'll have at that point. You'll be able to work with. You'll, you know, be happy. You will be self-actualized again, which is part of the hierarchy of need. That is the ultimate pinnacle of the world. Let's see. Paging through the other cards. Judgment in the Housewives Tarot is a lady standing on a scale, and then in the world is her recipe box with various pictures of a family, a baby, a house, and a car. Let's see.
Fair
those
enough.
Are standard. Okay. Judgment is due in the Pagan Tarot is doing a past life regression and understanding where you came from. And in the world, it's a priest and a priestess surrounded by all four elementals. That's nice. I understand that one. Okay. Let's see. Keep going. All right. In the Whimsical Tarot, Judgment is, like I said, Jiminy Cricket talking to Pinocchio. And in the world, it looks like the fairy godmother. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Glinda the Good Witch in her bubble. Well, the fairy godmother is one of those iconic things that crosses all...
this is true.
You know, possible stories, because there's always...
And the very
fairy
best
godmother.
Version is the three in... is it Sleeping Beauty?
Yeah.
The old Disney movie where they sing Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo and all that kind of stuff.
No, the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo is Cinderella.
Oh, damn it.
There's Sleeping Beauty is Flora, Fauna, and Merriweather.
Yeah.
And which I thought was kind of interesting because you have plant, animal, and environment. And they're the ones that have the battle over the dress, whether it's blue or red.
This is true. And it's just so important.
Yes, it's just incredibly, you know, I don't know. Although I do have to wonder how Fauna managed to get Cinderella or Aurora raised to 18 without being able to cook.
Oh, come on now. Look at kids nowadays. Microwaves and mom and dad cooking and silliness like that.
And I understand that,
possible.
But he is the mom, okay? They took Aurora when she was a baby, and they went off into the wild. And they swore that they would not use magic, okay? But here you have three women who are living with a baby in a forest house who can't cook. How are they eating? That's 16
years of meals.
They're
magical. They don't need to eat.
Yeah, they don't need to eat. Aurora does. Aurora's human.
I suppose. But she's living in a fairy house. I mean, there must be some sort of magical, life-sustaining system going on there. Because, I mean, every other fairy story that ever has someone whisked away to, like, Elfheim or Fairyland or anything like that, they survive on, like, dew and, you know, meadow pollen and shit like that. Let's
manna
be realistic.
From heaven. Realistic? Get real. This is fantasy.
Exactly. And besides which, if we're being realistic, I mean, she is painting on like plastic sheets. So, of course she's going to live, regardless. Disney never, ever considers the reality of how someone survives 20 years.
Yeah, you never see a Disney hero go to the bathroom. I mean, you see somebody actually take a bath once.
Can you imagine that, though? Like, Aladdin's, you know, off in some room grunting and farting and stuff. Wait a minute, Jasmine. Just give me a sec. I had a rough meal.
I don't have time to run right now. I've got to poop.
You know, like, you never see Aladdin making the wish for the toilet. And yet, that would have been a very real consideration if you were in the middle of the desert for no reason at all.
It would have been, yeah. I mean, food, you know, they eat very occasionally, but, you know, they don't eat consistently.
But it's usually like a gigantic spread. It's like they eat one meal the entire movie, and it's just this huge, massive spread that some magical person has cast into existence.
Mm. So now we're back to the world again. Because the world
it's
is
all tarot. It yeah. really is. No matter how weird our stuff is, it is tarot.
All right, let me pull up the compare cards for these decks so I can get the reversed meanings as well. And so view cards, and not that. I want the sun, and now we're going to look at reversals. The sun reversed confusion, unhappiness, problems, and obstacles. Which would follow, wouldn't it? I mean,
exactly.
When you have something that is supposed to bring clarity, and suddenly it turns up backwards, upside down, you're not going to have clarity anymore. You're going to have confusion. You're going to have hidden stuff. With the... Judgment. God, I couldn't think. Let's see. Judgment reversed. Weakness, lost affection, separation, and divorce. Except
fear of change, denial of the inner call to, you know, take that final step in the initiation, procrastination. There's a lot of ideas that come when you reverse these cards and,
mm-hmm.
you know,
criticism, delay, upheaval, loneliness, and self-pity. I would also add into that self-delusion.
Yeah.
And overweening ego. Because when you start adding those into the mix, it really clouds your judgment.
Yeah, definitely.
Like hiding everything. And then with the world reversed is unfinished business, delays, and stagnation, limitations on progress, insecurity, unrewarded uncertainty. And when with the card that represents the end of one phase and the beginning of a new study and the everything that you can have, that would follow, wouldn't it? Discouragingly small advance, failure, the inability to finish what you've started. So in these cases, you understand the tarot, the reversed cards for at least the major arcana are not always catastrophic. They are not always a one-for-one reversal of what the upright meaning is. In these three cases, it is. Because you have the elements that are part of your life, and when you reverse that around, either those elements are missing or those elements are showing the negative side. One of the things that I always get surprised about, and this has to do with the tarot, I promise, is people who work with the elementals, the Undine and the Sylphs and everything, they always tend to project the greatest things onto them. The Sylphs are nice, they're kind, they're zephyrs, they are a little scatterbrained, they, you know, cool you nicely on a day, they're kind, they're pixies, they're wonderful, they're cute, they're little girls with gossamer wings, okay? No one ever, unless they've had these experiences, no one starting ever remembers that wind is also the tornado that rips things apart and sends pieces of straw through oak trees that are 10 feet in circumference without bending the straw. Okay?
True.
This is not something that's nice. I was working with an air dragon at one point not too long ago. She was getting punished for something and was confined to a room. Okay, now the dragon that had given her this sentence and said, "You stay in here, you're grounded," didn't remember that she's an air dragon. The worst thing that you can do is put an air dragon into a confined area where they can't get out, where they can't see the sky. She went apeshit. And I'm not talking about, you know, crying and stomping her feet. I'm talking about destroying everything that was in the room, making missiles out of all of it. And I went in there to try to calm her down. She was actively trying to kill me because she was upset, she was mad, and she was going to, by God, have her way. I finally got close enough to her that I was able to hold her, and we teleported outside, and as soon as she saw the sky, she calmed down. I mean, it was incredible. It was like flipping a switch. And once we got up in the sky where she could feel the air around her, it was all better. She was, you know, sorry that she had destroyed everything. She was sorry that she had been punished, that she did whatever it was that she was getting punished for, you know, and was hysterical and very, very, you know, down on herself. But the dragon that put her in the room was like, "Oh, my God, I didn't even think about that." And it was just, you know, and this is a dragon that, I don't know if you all know anything about dragon life cycles. Typically, they live about 100 years to 1 year for us, okay? So somebody that is 150 years old, they're about 3 or 4 in human years, okay? When you're talking about this dragon was only about 45 years old. So it was literally still a baby. And destroying things that I didn't, ripping flagstones out of the ground because she's mad with the sheer force of the wind. I mean, and nobody really thinks about this unless they've experienced it. Every single element has this counter to it that is massively destructive. Water, the tsunami in Japan when there was the earthquake and the 2-3 nuclear reactors went critical, and they're still finding junk washing up on coasts of a different continent from that.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, if you trace back to the Minoan and Theran civilizations, I mean, you're dealing with the same thing. Water just going crazy and destructive. And are you blowing bubbles in a glass?
No, I was drinking some coffee. It's got a pour thing, but it doesn't have an air hole in it. So sorry about that.
No worries. I was like, that seems a bit different.
Yes,
that's not
a child
the fierce,
and I'm blowing bubbles,
you know,
in my milk, mommy.
That's not the tsunami sound I was picturing, but nonetheless.
But also, remember the flood that we had in Nashville, 4 years ago, that I lived through? I mean, it came within literally 100 feet of my front door. And downtown was wiped out simply because somewhere up in Missouri it rained for a month solid. I mean, that's, you know, pretty significant. And there's, you know, the Middle America floods from that same time period. There's the monsoons down in India and Burma and those areas that get just completely wiped out every year, are rebuilt, and they're completely wiped out the next year. You know, people lose lives from water. And you know, everybody's like, the only one that they think of as being destructive, if they think of it at all, is fire. And,
yeah,
you know, fire goes in and they think of, you know, raging wildfires and Yosemite getting destroyed with a lightning strike or somebody throwing a match someplace. But in
and
this
yet,
one,
interesting enough, I mean, fire has in certain species of trees, for instance. I mean, fire is the only thing that will open the cones to allow them to reproduce.
Exactly. I call fire God's eraser, because it is the way that the gods have decided that they will use to cleanse the slate to start over. Okay? They go in and they use fire to destroy an area, and then invariably, no matter how bad the fire was, a couple of months later, you've got green growing things there again. Granted,
yeah,
they're
for
not
sure.
The huge trees that were there before. They're not the lush undergrowth and the habitat, but they are green growing things, and the area is recovering. And a lot of times it's recovering faster because of all the good nutrients that just got put back into the soil by all the ash by the fire.
Well, and that's precisely it, right? I mean, it's a very cyclical thing, and you see it in not only like the daily cycle of, you know, the 24-hour day and, you know, monthly cycles and whatnot. It's a very, you know, short-term kind of a cycle, even with the process of wildfires or, you know, floods and that sort of thing. I mean, cycles happen, you know, surprisingly, naturally.
Gosh, our entire universe is built on cycles. Who would have thought?
Well, who was it that said, you know, I think it was, I want to say Seattle is credited with saying, you know, something along the line of, like, everything in nature is in a circle, you know, so, like, this is how we view the world, you know, kind of thing. It's like, if you, I mean, even the whole process with the tarot major arcana, I mean, it's all cyclical. It's more, it's not really a circle as much as it is a spiral, though.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because, you know, you begin with the Fool, you go through the whole major arcana, you come to the World card. That's only the beginning stage for the next cycle, which is above the original.
Mm-hmm. And it starts over. Yeah, it's like I was reading something with the Kabbalah not too long ago, and the World Tree in that. You have, I don't know if many of our listeners are familiar with it, but it's a visual representation of spiritual descent from heaven. It's called the lightning flash. You have this zigzag path, and you've got these 10 seraphs, I think. Maybe mispronouncing. Sephiroth? Okay.
Yeah.
That one starts in the center at the very top, and then it comes down in this zigzag pattern to a point in the very bottom. And usually this is the descent of the power from the heaven to the earth, okay? The very bottom one is represented as the earth. The very top one is represented as Yahweh, okay? Well, they pointed out that this is only a part of it. And then they laid out two more sets of trees of life so that the very topmost Sephiroth was connected to the very bottommost Sephiroth on another set, and said, okay, this is the actual pattern because the very bottommost is the topmost in another section.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and that's another representation of the spiral of the tarot journey.
Yeah, actually, if you ever get a hold of Dion Fortune's The Mystical Kabbalah, spelled Q-A-B-A-L-A-H, although I've typically seen the spelling K-A-B-B-A-L-A-H, nonetheless, there's
no...
See, there's a bunch of different spellings, and...
Well, it's like, it's along the lines of the Mideast languages, where as long as you get the pronunciation right, it doesn't matter how you spell it.
Well, this is true, because especially given the fact that, like, in Hebrew, I think Kabbalah is three letters, right?
Mm.
So it's all a matter of filling in the vowels where you feel like. But nonetheless...
How many spellings did Gaddafi's name have?
I have no idea.
It was like 50. As long as it was Gaddafi, it was, you know, fine.
But, yeah, I mean... if you happen to have that book handy, diagram one, the fold out, there's a couple of really cool diagrams that are helpful, but it shows the three pillars of the whole tree, but it also shows the lightning bolt going from Keter to Chokmah, Bina, Chesed, Gevura, Tiferet, etc., straight down to earth.
And then imagine taking one of those and attaching the bottommost to the topmost, and then doing it again, and then doing it again, and then.
Well, exactly. And it's interesting, too, because, I mean, when you get really into Kabbalah, not everyone will. It's fun and interesting.
But it's very complex.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole idea with it, too, is that there's an inverted tree, which is kind of like, it represents all the negative manifestations of all the Sephiroth in the upright tree. So you have to work your way from the very, very bottom to get up to, you know, ground zero, say. And then you start working your way up the tree.
Mm-hmm. The tree of death.
Exactly. It's a great... I mean, if you're really into, like, mystical stuff and esoterica, you know, Kabbalah is a lot of fun. It can be really confusing and intimidating, but if you pick up the right starter books, it's not so bad.
Yeah, and there are some decks out there now that reinterpret the cards into a Kabbalistic mindset. I know the Merlin Tarot does. It's got readings for the Tree of Life, for the middle pillar, for the left and right hand path, for the lightning flash, and relates the different cards to the different Sephiroths and various things like that. And there are some that are specifically dedicated to that. I mean,
there's one called the Heindel deck that's really cool and kind of alchemical and, you know, parchment looking.
The Golden Dawn would be another one that would do it because they're very into using the Kabbalah as well.
Wouldn't doubt that.
Yeah, but yes, because the standard Rider-Waite is very Judeo-Christian oriented, as we stated. I mean, the guy was a Christian monk who was excommunicated because he didn't agree with the Pope. So there's going to be a lot of Christian representation in it. And this is, you know, standard. So people have come back and they have reinterpreted some of the Judeo-Christian symbolism into other faith paths. Once again, learn the standard deck. Learn it so well that you don't have to think about it, and then start integrating other decks that reinterpret the stuff, because then you'll start seeing connections between them and why this card represents this esoteric idea in Hinduism, whereas it represents this in the standard deck. And you'll see that connection,
sure.
And it'll make it easier for you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it does help to be familiar with different world mythologies and religions, but, you know, stick with the one you're familiar with for a start, and then work with a basic tarot deck so that you can familiarize yourself with just the basic symbols before you start interpreting, you know, or incorporating, like, Hindu symbolism or, you know, Kabbalistic stuff or any of that sort of thing, because it will make tarot seem a lot more confusing to you to start with. So give yourself a little, you know, ease into it just by, you know, working with the basic stuff first.
Huh. I'm looking at my copy of the Robin Wood deck, the electronic copy, and the Ten of Pentacles is reversed in here. Is it? Because I never really looked. It shows... Normally, when you have the pip cards, they have the number of what they're representing at the bottom or somewhere on the card. With every single card here, it says 10. On the 10 of Pentacles, it says 01. And I was like, what? Where did that come from? Let me look in my actual deck and see if that is backwards.
I hope that's not the case. That'd be a really weird thing.
Somebody, I think, accidentally just reversed the scan that they took, which
probably
makes a good argument for me to take my brand new Robinwood deck and go and rescan everything. Okay.
Yeah, because the Ten of Pentacles, the Arch of Pentacles goes from left where it touches the ground by the dog's butt, and then arches up to the right.
Yeah, so they've got it so that it's the bottom of the arch is on the right, going to the left. Yep, they reverse the scan. That's funny.
I didn't know that could be done, but whatever. Nonetheless. That's a great segue into the 10 pip cards, because we have like 45 minutes left, and we've been talking about everything in the world, the sun, and, you know, judgment.
Since that was one of the cards.
It's very true.
The 10s. The 10s are, people see these as the end place that you're trying to get to, and it is one of the end places. However, it is not the end place, okay? Once again, this is a, they represent a goal achieved, okay? If you play video games, a little trumpet plays and the pop-up comes up that says achievement unlocked, that's the tens. it's not by any means a stopping place. It is, like I said, a longer-term goal that you've gotten, as opposed to some of the other cards where it's a short-term goal that you've gotten. Ten of Pentacles is showing a family, grandfather, son, his child with their spouse, and then his grandchild. There's a couple of dogs in the picture. There's 10 pentacles on the arch in the background. They're in a very nice area. This one is the financially stable home, okay? This is the married with white picket fence, the 2.5 children, the two cars. This is what the dream is, okay? It is a family that, the nuclear family, that has achieved the financial and the material success to be able to stop worrying about that, the middle-class goal, if you will. Moving on to the Ten of Swords, we've got a guy laying on the ground at night, just as dawn is coming up, with 10 swords sticking out of his back. Okay. The best explanation I can give for this one is betrayal. Because think about any time you've been knifed in the back by a friend, and this guy has 10 swords in his back. So this is a really huge betrayal. This is something that either he didn't see coming or was done in such a way that it is devastating to him. Okay. The Nine of Cups is similar to the Ten of Pentacles. The Ten of Cups is similar to the Ten of Pentacles. This is what actually sparked the relation between the pip cards for me, because on the Ten of Pentacles, you have the financially happy home. In the Ten of Cups, you have the emotionally happy home. Okay, remember, the cups are about emotions. You have the cups arranged in a semicircle. You have a rainbow going from the last one back to the first one. And framed within that, you have a father, a mother, and two children. This is where the finances may not be the greatest, but they are happy with each other. They are emotionally stable. They support each other. They love each other. Okay, and the Pentacles, it's not stated explicitly that they actually like each other. They could have all kinds of domestic problems. It's just they've got all the outward appearances of it. They have the Maserati and the widescreen TV and the cell phone, the iPhone for everybody, as opposed to this family who may be living on food stamps but are happy with each other and enjoy each other's company and enjoy coming home and spending time with their family, as opposed to I can't wait to get away from my brother / sister. Okay? And understand that this is not going to be a permanent state. You are going to have internal domestic squabbles. But this card represents getting those internal domestic squabbles and getting them resolved quickly so that they don't fester, okay, as opposed to, you know, times when you just, you get offended by somebody and you internalize it and it stays there for years and years and years, and then at their funeral you're screaming at the coffin, you know, you fucking bastard, you know, da da da, whatever. In the Ten of Wands, the Ten of Wands is one of those that I really, I'm kind of ambivalent about seeing it, but I like the card. It's a guy in a red tunic walking down a road carrying 10 rods, okay? Now, these rods are not tied together anyway. They're not connected to each other. They're all loose. He's not carrying them over his shoulder. He's not carrying them intelligently, and this is representing a burden that he may not be able to carry as far as he can. And in the distance, there's a house that is his goal. The burden's getting a little unwieldy. Okay? So you have, in the tens, you have a financially stable home, and you have a betrayal by being stabbed in the back, you have an emotionally happy home, and then you have burdens that you can't carry. Okay, so this is back and forth, but this is once again representations of goals being hit. Okay, now people would say that it's kind of assholic, I guess you could call it, to say that being stabbed in the back is a goal. But think about it: when you get stabbed in the back that badly, normally you go screw it and completely cut ties with everything. And you isolate yourself, and you go into a hermit phase. And so that is an end point. It's not a good end point, but it is an end point. With the Ten of Wands, because he's carrying so many things, and he's carrying them so badly, this is another end point. He's got too many burdens, and he's got to make a decision at this point as to whether he's going to keep carrying them, and, you know, fumbling them and having to readjust them and then finally hurting when he does get to his destination, or if he's going to set some of them down and readjust and fix the situation and move on. Okay, so it is another end point. So that's those. We can go, I guess we could go through the various other decks as well, and I guess we probably should since we've started those. Standard Rider Waite, all have the same thing. In the Housewives Tarot, I know you love hearing about these, Brian. The Ten of Pentacles is a house framed in a circle with 10 pentacles around it. With the Ten of Swords, it is a pincushion.
Okay, I like the pincushion one. Yeah. I actually do like that one.
In the Ten of Cups, it is a cocktail party with 10 drinks set out, which...
There's a lot of booze flowing in that deck.
Well, it's the 50s. I mean, you know, everybody was drinking at that point in time because they didn't
smoking
have Prozac.
And smoking while they were pregnant. It's good for the baby.
Yes, it is. The Ten of Wands is a lady in a house dress with a apron, who's got 3-4 mops, a garden rake, brooms, dusters, and they're all falling all over the place, and she's trying to control them. So that one follows well with too many burdens. The Llewellyn
too big a house, too much cleaning involved.
Or something, yeah. She needs to get a maid in there. Pagan Tarot. Pretty much the same thing, same representations. You've got, for the Ten of Pentacles, a lady with a very nice vanity with various makeup and jewelry and things hanging on it. For the Ten of Swords, you've got a lady who has tripped and apparently dropped all of her swords, and they're all broken all over the place. With the Ten of Cups, you've got a coven who is standing around toasting each other with a rainbow in the background, which would follow with the emotionally happy home. And on the Ten of Wands, now why do they have that? They've got a lady carrying several wands. She's dropped two. But then there's also the representations of the pentacles, the cups, and I don't see the swords in there, but, I'd have to...
Does she have an athame on her belt?
Didn't see one. Nope, sure doesn't.
Alrighty.
Well, I don't know. Anyway, the pagan tarot has seemed to be very, very interesting. I actually like looking at it. Where else do we have? Okay. All right. Oh, nice. The Whimsical Tarot. We have Humpty Dumpty as the Ten of Swords. We have Snow White being carried into the castle by the prince in the Ten of Cups. It looks like, for the Ten of Pentacles, I don't really know what that story is supposed to represent.
Describe the card.
Guy and a girl standing next to each other holding hands. There's a golden pony in the background. There is what looks like a firebird or a phoenix in a cage hanging in a tree with golden apples in it and a castle far in the background.
I have no idea at all.
I don't either. I'd have to get the book and look it up. And the Ten of Rods for the Whimsical Tarot is a golden-haired girl kneeling by a lake crying while a raven flies overhead under a weeping willow. Maybe something out of Greek mythology, but I don't know what that one is right now.
The ten card with the guy and the girl and the animals and all that stuff. The castle, what suit was that again?
Pentacles.
Pentacles?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, my roommate blew her nose while I was sitting here, so...
Yeah. Anyway, okay, and then we get to the Druidcraft, and those are standard symbols again, and the Hello Kitty is standard symbols once again. Grandpa and everybody, and... the puppy carrying 10 bats, and the Celtic tarot is the same thing for everything. So, yeah, pretty much standard symbolism across the
board.
Oh,
there you go. Okay. Pence. Suit of Pence. 10 is... Apparently the story is called The Golden Bird.
I think I've heard of that one at some point. I don't remember it, though.
Well, okay. I'll put the link for that page into the chat so that people can check it out if they're curious, because it gives sort of a little guide to the name of the story for each card.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
It is.
I'm proud I just found that.
Suit of Pentacles, Suit of Cups, Rods, said Rods, Ten of Rods, the Princess, the Goose Girl?
I don't know what that is.
I don't know either. Anyway, seems interesting. That's something I'd have to look up. Okay, cool. I'll have to keep that. Anyway, so that's it. That's it for most of it. Like I said, next week we're going to be going over all of the court cards. And the reason that I want to put all of them together and do 16 cards at once is because unlike the entire rest of the tarot, the court cards represent actual people. Okay, now it can represent them by attitudes and by personality type, or it can represent them by actual physical characteristics, or it can represent them by sex, or it can represent them by the ages that they are. Okay, but the court cards pretty much always represent people. So if you're going to use a significator for your reading, these would be the cards that you would go to, unless you get a really strong slap in the face from the cards that say, no, use this card. Okay. The pip cards, aces through tens, are situations, are things that they're going to be experiencing, their activities that they're in. The major arcana are archetypes and very blatant lessons, and the court cards are the people, okay, that are going through them. So if you see, say, the Queen of Swords pop up at some point in an actual reading, it's probably representing a older female who tends to be a controlling bitch in the questioner's life. And that's something that, you know, you need to say and you need to point out, because 99% of the time they're going to go, oh, I know who that is.
Yes, we all have those.
We all have somebody like that in our life.
Folks,
kind of
we
inevitable.
Have half an hour left of the show. If you feel like calling in for a reading tonight, the number to call is 646-564-9966. You are more than welcome to give us a call tonight. If you have questions, you're also welcome to ask those. You can also hit us up in the chat room that we have open on the show.
Mm-hmm. There's one person in there right now besides the two of us.
Yes, listening, probably.
Email, email works. I'm joy.a.philip, two L's, no S, at gmail.com.
I'm woodwillsradio@yahoo.ca.
Okay. You can email us anytime during the week. We'll save up the emails and stick them and answer them in the next show. We'll read out the questions. We'll keep you private if you want us to. We're also both on Tumblr. I'm at wide-worlds-joy.tumblr.com. He's at cosmic-rebirth.tumblr.com, and we surf there daily.
Pretty much.
I don't know about you, but I know I'm on there, you know, at least 10 hours a day, reblogging pictures of kittens and stuff.
I'm not actually actively doing anything on there most of the time that I sit here. It's just sort of, I'm waiting for the message numbers to show up. That's pretty much all I do on Tumblr.
The message? Oh, for people.
The little count on my inbox.
Oh, yeah. I don't ever get those. I get a one and I get excited.
That would be me, too. Yeah. I mean,
oh, boy, somebody
get,
wrote me. And then
stuff.
I look in there and it's fuck off and die. And it's like, oh. Thank you. I was excited,
yeah.
Now I'm depressed.
For me, it's usually like some inquiry for advice about something or other, or, you know, a request for a recommendation on, you know, a book, or, you know, some curiosity about some subject that I've listed as an interest or whatever. But they're very few and far between. I do not, you know, keep my hopes high in getting messages daily, but
somebody asked a friend of mine how she got such a popular Tumblr famous blog, and she's like, I'm Tumblr famous? Wow. I only have about 200 followers. You know, usually the Tumblr famous people are, you know, 10,000 followers or more. Like,
at least.
Yeah. So, I guess failing any other subject, we're going to just riff for a while like we normally do.
Indeed.
Guys, what a departure, huh?
There's nothing wrong with doing the same thing every week.
Oh, my God. Yeah, tarot. God, it gets just so irritating. Let's do something different. Let's talk about what we want to talk about.
Well, I actually got a few new books today because I am horrifically awful about, like, keeping Amazon wish lists. I've got, like, 30 wish lists, and each of them has dozens of books on them that I'll probably never finish in this lifetime. But I got a few today. One is Food of the Gods by Terence McKenna, and that talks about, like, the idea, I guess, that he's putting forward that magic mushrooms and, you know, entheogens were key in human advancement. Hello?
I think we lost him.
Who?
Hello?
Am I not on?
Hello?
Hello?
I'm still here.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can't hear you through the chat or through the site.
How weird, because I'm looking at everything and it seems fine.
And it ended.
Did it?
Yes.
How weird. It didn't end for me. I've still got everything going.
I don't know. It says 28 minutes for me. I don't know. What the heck is going on? Maybe... Oh, well. I'll just close it. Maybe it's me and just the
I hope so. I hope it's not just me talking to dead air right now.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Sometimes the studio stuff will like shut down or something, and I'll be like, I don't know what's happening, but it doesn't look like that, you know, at the moment. So I'm hoping that's not the case. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, maybe refresh your screen and see if that changes anything.
Maybe, I don't know. Anyway, well, failing that. Okay, my everything went down, so that doesn't mean squit for you guys. It just means
yeah,
you can hear what I'm saying.
Apparently, like, someone was telling me, like, on Monday I was doing my explanation of the connection to nature that I was kind of doing for a podcast on Druidism, because I've had people asking me about that stuff. And I did a 9-minute intro piece by Alan Stivell called Is, beautiful Celtic harp piece. And then for 10 minutes afterward, I was talking, and then I looked at my button, and it said that I had the mic muted. But apparently, whoever was listening, and I had a listener confirm this afterward, I wasn't muted, and I was like, why is it telling me I'm muted? And, you know, I'm not. So here I am, like, apologizing after 10 minutes, laughing hysterically, like, trying to go, yeah, I didn't realize I had the mic muted, so I've been talking for 10 minutes about what I wanted to talk about, and you haven't heard it, but apparently they have, so...
There you go with why it might be a good thing to pre-record the episode and just broadcast it. But, yeah, no.
I haven't figured out how to do that yet. It says I can somehow, but I haven't figured out how exactly to do that.
Okay, for some reason my player won't play it. It was playing it fine up to about 4 minutes ago. And I was hearing it very, very quietly through my speakers.
Guests in the chat room, do you mind like letting us know if the sound is still audible to you? Because like we have no way of checking this out right now.
I hope I can still be heard.
I still hear you, and I imagine that. You know, Blog Talk Radio can still hear you, so...
I hope so. They're saying...
We might as well still banter like we can be heard, because, you know, I don't want us to sit here for a half hour puzzling over why we can't be heard right now.
Are we live or are we Memorex? Does it matter?
Oh, dear God.
Oh, goodness. And the guest isn't responding, so maybe they can't hear us. Okay, well, I don't know. But anyway, okay. Oh, you said that. Okay. I saw something pop up in the
chat.
You
were, like, excited for a second there, and then it was just me.
Oh, it's you.
Yeah. That was a letdown. Brian
okay.
Talking again. Jesus.
Oh, God, he's always talking. Jeez. Just shut up already. Let me talk. God.
But yeah, so I've got Food of Gods by Terence McKenna, which I'm looking forward to reading. Cause it sounds really crazy. Then I found one. Okay, on related videos to, I don't know, something I was watching on YouTube, brings up a conversation by about a book by John Allegro called Sacred Mushroom and the Cross, and it talks about there not being any historical Jesus whatsoever. Jesus Christ was a mushroom. The flying mushroom. Yeah, oh yeah, Amanita muscaria apparently was Jesus Christ. So I'm looking forward to reading that one because it sounds like it'll be nuts.
It does sound like it's going to be nuts.
Oh, it's so interesting sounding. The title alone, just like, and then, okay, if you Google Christ mushroom, it comes up with fly agaric images and crucifixes and all kinds of crazy stuff. It's fun.
Well, one of the things that I thought was interesting, somebody, you know how there's the persistent joke and the denigration of Christianity around Easter with Happy Zombie Jesus Day?
Yeah.
And, you know, him shambling around and trying to eat brains and stuff. Somebody actually a couple of Easters ago came out with a complete, total denial of that. And this is a pagan that did this. He said he's not a zombie because he's not mindless. Well, he's also not a mummy because he's not wrapped up in bandages, and he's not in Egypt. He's not a vampire because he doesn't drink blood. He doesn't eat brains. And, he's not a white because you're not scared and run away from him. What he is he's a lich. He's a powerful magician who has decided to break through the bonds of death and come back and wander around the earth doing whatever in the hell he wants, gathering followers. And I went, you know, Jesus Lich Day. Happy Lich Jesus Day.
If you're going to be irreverent, at least do it well.
Yes. Oh, some of the things, just the irreverence of, that's one of the other very persistent criticisms I have of a lot of Christianity. Not all Christianity, but a lot of it. A lot of organized religions. They can't laugh at their own religion. And if you can't do that, what the hell are you living for?
Religion is a celebration. Yeah, I mean, the fundamentalist pagans do the same thing. They're
yeah,
so
and I get really pissed at them, too, for it. I mean, you know, life is a celebration. Religion is a celebration. If you can't celebrate it through laughter, what the fuck's the point?
Well, and I think, too, that one of my particular pet peeves among at least the Wiccan and witch community, tends to be that come Samhain, Halloween, they get really antsy about, like, the stereotypical witches. And for me, the idea of, like, a woman carrying a broom and wearing a pointed hat and, you know, pointy shoes and whatever, it's something to laugh about and have fun with, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't see that as a negative thing. I think that is a lighthearted, fun stereotype, you know, to play it up, you know. If you want to make your coven a public thing, you go out in pointy hats and you dress up and you goof around. You show people that being Wiccan is fun, you know. It's something that is celebratory. I mean,
it can be. And that's, you know, a takeoff on the Welsh ladies that would immigrate, because their costumes were big conical hats with point chopped off. And, yeah, I mean, the green-faced hag that's evil, you know, that's a leftover from the witch hunts. But, yeah, the standard. That's one of the things that I really got to compliment some of the current society for, and especially Wicked. I don't know how many of the listeners are familiar with the play Wicked, but it comes from a book. The book is taking the Wizard of Oz and turning it upside down on its ear, because the premise is that the Wicked Witch of the West is actually not wicked. She's the sister of the good witch of the north, who's actually not good. They're people with their own motivations. The Witch of the West and the Witch of the East, who are supposedly the bad people, are just people. And they have their own motivations for doing things. And, you know, here comes this girl with a house that kills her sister and then steals her magical shoes and then goes marching across the entire length and breadth of Oz to get to the city where she can be denigrated some more and hated and, you know, lies told about her and how it's so unfair. And I love that because that's, you know, that speaks so strongly to a lot of pagan experiences.
Yeah. I listened to the audiobook of that, and I have to say it was probably one of my favorites that, you know, I've, quote, read. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, if you want to pick up a really interesting read and see The Wizard of Oz from a totally different light where the wizard himself is not portrayed as a good guy. He is a manipulative, like, politician type.
I've never read the book. I just know, I've read enough reviews to know what the story's about.
Oh, it's great. I mean, Oz, I mean, okay, the Land of Oz is you know, in chaos, and Elphaba, the Wicked Witch, is in school. And she's like this rebellious teenager, you know, who's, like, politically active, and she's, like, you know, trying to change the world and stuff. And basically the wizard is portrayed as this, like, manipulative, evil politician type. And, oh, it's a great story.
George Bush.
So,
excellent. Sorry.
I'm trying to think of when that was written. It might have been a reference to him.
Might have been. I do know that there's another book that he wrote from the perspective of the evil stepsisters in Cinderella. And Cinderella comes off as a whiny, little, spoiled, rich girl who's not ready to be poor and is insisting that because she's asked to clean up her plates after dinner, she thinks that, you know, she presents it in her story as she's being forced to be a slave to everybody. You know? And, oh, man, I heard about that one, and I was like, shit, because I had that idea to write that story.
Well, I think that's the thing with really good, long-lasting oral tradition, right? Like, the stories that are passed down generation to generation, that you find in, like, the Grimm's fairy tales or in Hans Christian Andersen's collection of tales.
Mm-hmm.
You can take a look at those and rewrite them from all kinds of different perspectives. You've probably heard or seen the politically corrected versions of a lot of those. I find those annoying, personally.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the original stories, some of them are graphically violent. But, you know, they've been whitewashed to be, like, charming stories, you know, and that sort of thing. Like, the old Disney movies, there's a few stories that they did in the early days that were basically, like, Disney-fied versions of what are traditionally, like, graphically violent stories.
Well, look at Hercules that they came out with not too long ago.
This is true. I mean,
think about the myth of Hercules. Anybody that's studied any mythology has come across the story of Hercules and the 12 labors of Hercules and the monsters that he had to go out, the stables, if only. He's trying to get married.
Oh, yeah.
And he has to clean out all of this crap from this huge stable. And he, you know, the guy before in a couple of hours, and there's no way that he can do it physically. Was that in the Disney movie? No. Was the fact that Hades, who is presented in the movie as being an evil bastard, is actually the brother of Zeus, and was the one god who was assigned his role rather than working into it. And all he does is he takes care of the people that have died. He's
That's
not
true.
Manipulating things. He's not grabbing stuff. Yes, he did grab Persephone and rape the shit out of her and then kidnap her. But, you know, when you're sentenced to an underground cavern and every time you stick your head above the ground, people scream and run away from you, you know, I think I'd, you know, want to find a mate, too.
Well, I think, too, that if I remember correctly, Hades is portrayed in the Percy Jackson movie, The Lightning Thief, that, you know, he actually complained that he was, you know, put there by his brother instead of, you know, having been, you know, quote, born for the job kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if you haven't seen Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief, go see it. It's a great movie. I'm kind of hoping to read the books because the way it's portraying Greek mythology sounds really cool.
On the
modernizing.
I was going to mention on the subject of whitewashing myths. I saw, to my horror, one of the books that I was reviewing for young girls was talking about how Persephone decided to go down to Hades because he was lonely and to be with him and to marry him because he's actually a good guy. And I'm like, what in the hell is this?
Of course.
And the whitewashing of the myth. The author even says, I've whitewashed this myth. This is not really what happened. But thankfully, this gentler version is taking hold. And I'm like, what in the hell are you smoking? And would you share some with me? Because
exactly.
the whole point of that myth is the change of the seasons. That is the myth. The myth is Demeter, who is the goddess in charge of the harvest, losing her daughter, not being able to find her, being horrified that she's gone, mourning, which brings the winter.
Persephone,
you know, decides, oh, I'm going to, Hades is lonely, I'm going to go down and I'm going to be with him and I'm going to sleep with him, there's no reason for Demeter to be upset.
Yeah. Well, aside from the fact that, you know, Hades is from the wrong side of the tracks, I mean, he's so emo, but... But I think, like, one of the things that worries me in a lot of remakes of the movies that come out based on mythology and whatnot is that they do tend to cutesify it. You know, they make what are actually, like, really intense and amazing characters into, like, these corny, stupid characters that are just not what they are in the mythology.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, I understand the need to create a sort of a bit of elbow room for, you know, modernization or, you know,
especially when you're presenting it to a child. You don't want to present a child with the fact that Zeus knocked up some mortal woman, had an affair, and that his wife, Hera, actually hated the offspring and actively tried to kill Hercules multiple times. You don't want to present that to a four-year-old. So, yeah, I can understand mitigating that and making Zeus and Hera loving parents who wanted Hercules and, you know, who were blessed with this thing and then, you know, the taking away the powers and making him mortal. I can understand doing that. I don't like it because the myths are there for a reason, and making it cute and mitigating it and making it gentler defeats the purpose of having the myth. But you don't want to make that the only presentation. It would be better. It would make more sense to me that you have levels of understanding, like you do have with everything. One of my favorite examples of this is the Old Testament and the New Testament. The Old Testament, I say, are the rules of life for children, and the New Testament is the rules of life for adults. Okay? God came down and said, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Just like a parent would look at a child and go, don't touch the electricity. Don't touch that plug. You'll surely die if you do. Okay? Sound familiar?
This is true, actually. You do make a good point with that. I mean, because the New Testament is all about, you know, do this, or, you know, it's all about ideas presented in a more positive, affirming way.
Exactly. That's God coming to the adult and going, okay, here is electricity. This is how electricity works. This is what would happen were these things to happen. This is how to use it safely. You plug the plug in there, you don't touch it anymore. You have the circuit that runs this thing. If you are wearing rubber shoes, you can stick a fork into it. Now, if you decide to do the dumb things, you're going to get hurt. And it's your own damn fault because I've just taught you how to use this right. I'll forgive you. I'll do my best to make it better for you. But you were stupid. You got punished. And that's the New Testament, you know.
That's actually a really good sort of look at it because I think what deters a lot of people from reading the Bible, even if they don't believe, you know, even if they're not seeking to become Christian or, you know, whatever, I think people tend to just look at it as a religious text and therefore no. But the same people are going out and reading, like, the Mahabharata or the Bhagavad Gita or, you know, like, I don't know, the Tao Te Ching or any of those other, you know, different texts. And they're just reading them and, you know, gaining what amazing information and knowledge can be gleaned from them. Whereas they're not giving the same credit to, like, the Western tradition. I mean, yes, there have been, you know, traditions that have completely misrepresented the ideas presented in the Old and New Testaments, but that doesn't devalue or dismiss what could be learned from them.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the reason that Christianity is looked down upon, and Christians in particular are looked down upon, is in a lot of cases, not all, but in a lot of cases, you have a schizophrenia going on where an adherent to Christianity tries to live both sets of rules at the same time. And you simply cannot live with don't touch the plug, you will surely die, at the same time of here's how to use it correctly to illuminate your house.
Well, and I think, too, that there's kind of this desire to dismiss, like, you know, there are these churches who consider themselves, quote, New Testament churches, and they dismiss the Old Testament, but at the same time, they're holding on to the old Levitical laws about relationships and, you know, all this other kind of stuff.
And
that
the commandments and, I mean, if you look at the Ten Commandments, you've got a list of don'ts. Don't do this. Don't have any other gods before me. Don't murder. Don't steal. Don't lie. Okay? Don't do this. No, 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 no. But in the New Testament, you've got, you know, okay, here's a list of do's. Love your neighbor. Treat others the way you would like to be treated were you in their position. Okay? And trying to live a don't at the same time of living a do, it just makes for a really insane. Anyway, to relate back to the myths, levels of understanding. You have levels of understanding in the Bible. You have the child's laws, and then you have the adult laws. With a myth like Hercules, yes, present them with the idea that Zeus was a good dad. Don't bring Hera into it at all. Don't bring in that Hercules was born a god, because he wasn't. He was always mortal. And have him do the adventures and everything, because you can still do the exact same movie by removing those elements. And then for a 14-year-old, a TV movie or something like that, start bringing in something like the Hercules TV series or Xena Warrior Princess, where that's presented. Where you have a demigod wandering around on the earth who has amazing abilities, who has interactions with gods, whose mother, foster mother, stepmother,
Yeah, for sure. And actually, it brings to mind sort of the, quote, age appropriateness idea presented with even the Jesus movies that have been put out. I mean, you've got, like, the Jesus movie, the one that was done in the 70s or something that, you know, is, like, international. It's been translated to hundreds of languages or whatever. And that's kind of a very, you know, lighthearted movie. It's a good soft version that steers away from violence and that sort of thing. But then you've got something that, and actually it was weird to me. Have you ever seen The Last Temptation of Christ with Willem Dafoe as Jesus? Oh, it's such a great movie. It comes from a novel that wasn't based on scripture at all. Mm-hmm. But he basically presents the idea of Jesus as a human dealing with, like, voices in his head and, you know, a lot of problems that come up with hearing voices and, you know, the struggle with... That's good to know, actually.
Anyway, we've only got a few minutes left, so we need to end this conversation as much as I'm enjoying it. Like I said, next week, everybody, what we're going to do is all of the court cards, we're going to relate them together with each other. That's probably going to take the entire 2 hours. I mean, you can call
in. Oh, yeah,
in.
Easily.
Yeah, you can call in. We can try to get a reading in. We can definitely answer your questions if you have any. And then the week after that, get ready with your decks. Because I'm going to do sample readings and explain the thought processes and how to pull everything together as a whole unified reading, okay?
Well, here's an idea. What if we take a break from, you know, the intensity of the tarot thing and make that interim show like an open call night where we just banter and discuss any number of things that come up, you know, the way we always end, you know, every other week show, where people can call in and offer an opinion or ask questions, and then we can, like, spin off into tangent galore.
It would be great if we actually had the audience participation. Unfortunately, from what I remember seeing and hearing, you know, there's a couple people who are calling, sure, but mostly our audience downloads it and listens to it later, which is great, but, you know, it doesn't help fill the time.
That's true, although we could banter for hours about stuff.
Oh, God, yes. Anyway, 2 minutes left. If there was a technical glitch in this, I don't know what happened. About 10 minutes ago, my speaker started giving, or 20 minutes ago, the speaker started giving the show again. So I was hearing it. So hopefully that this, all of this got recorded for you guys, and I'm going to download it later. My website is aaronsjournal.com. Go there, take a look if you want. Email us. We gave our emails earlier in the show. Come in. See us next week. Talk to us. We don't bite hard unless you really want us to. And, you know, come participate. This is audience participation. This is like an NPR call-in show. Please.
Yeah. Have a great night, folks. Thank you again for joining us. Join us again next week. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And this is me testing now to see just how much. Oh, I guess it's not. So be it.